KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
Today on KUCB News, an Unalaska car crash case from 2019 that killed two teens ends in mistrial after Anchorage jury deadlocks. And a winter storm watch is in effect for the eastern Aleutians this week, with up to 20 inches of snow expected Tuesday through Thursday. All of that and more coming up.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by GCI. Fiber Plus Internet is now available in Unalaska. GCI now offers high-speed internet in your community at the same plans and same pricing as Anchorage. More information at gci.com/internet.
You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM Unalaska. It's Monday, April 14th, 2025. I'm Sophia Stewart-Rossi with some local news. An Anchorage judge declared a mistrial Friday morning in the case against a young man involved in a 2019 Unalaska car crash that killed two teenage girls. The decision comes after a group of jurors was unable to come to a unanimous decision. KUCB's Maggie Nelson reports that this isn't the end for the nearly six-year-long homicide case.
Following more than 3 days of deliberation and over a week in trial, 24-year-old Dustin Ruckman was not convicted for his involvement in the deaths of two Unalaska teen girls, but he also hasn't been acquitted. The judge granted a mistrial after the jury returned a deadlocked verdict. One jury member, David, who didn't feel comfortable providing a surname, spoke with KUCB after the judge dismissed the group. He says it was an emotional experience.
And really hope that the community of Unalaska can come together and see it for what it is. It's just a really unfortunate situation that, in the grand scheme of things, I think it's just really unfair to apply blame to anybody.
In early May of 2019, when Ruckman was 18, he drove his truck up Unalaska's Mount Ballyhoo with his girlfriend at the time, 16-year-old Carly McDonald, and his friend, 18-year-old Kiara Renteria Haste. The truck eventually fell about 900 feet down the side of the mountain with the two girls inside. They were ejected and died in the fall. Ruckman sustained minor injuries, and he told police that he was thrown from the truck. He was facing two counts of criminally negligent homicide, but he went free Friday, for now. The jury began deliberations around 3 p.m. Monday, expressing concerns about a mistrial and deadlock almost from the start. The first note they gave the court raised concerns about a hung jury. That was written just about 2 hours from the start of their deliberations. Despite instructions from the judge to keep trying, the jurors returned a deadlocked verdict to the court Thursday afternoon. Matthews dismissed them for the day, and on Friday morning, he granted the mistrial.
At this point in time, given the time that you have taken, all of the work that you have put in, it's simply clear that you're not going to be able to come to a unanimous decision in this case. So I have declared a mistrial at this point in time.
The judge's decision was frustrating for many of the parties involved in this case, who've been waiting nearly 6 years for a verdict.
There's not a day that goes by that we don't think of her. You know, she, Kiara died one time, and every day she dies to me and Diana. It's been a long process for 6 years going through this.
That's Derek Haste, Kiara's father. Kiara's parents have been attending hearings, trial calls, and meetings with lawyers since 2019. For the last few weeks, they've been in Anchorage attending the trial. In mid-March, they watched as the court tried to fill a jury in Unalaska. They couldn't find enough impartial local candidates and moved the trial to Anchorage. Still, Kiara's mother, Diana Renteria, says this isn't the end for their pursuit of justice.
That I failed my daughter trying to get accountability and justice, but, you know, a mistrial to me means that there's a possibility of maybe going back trying again.
Renteria says the family may continue pursuing criminal charges against Ruckman. Ruckman's attorney, Julia Mowdy, declined a request for comment, as did Assistant District Attorney Patrick McKay Jr. Matthews scheduled a status hearing for May 13th to determine what comes next. Reporting for KUCB, with help from Sophia Stewart Rossi, I'm Maggie Nelson.
The National Weather Service has issued another winter storm watch for the Aleutian Islands, including Unalaska, Nikolsky, and Accutan, starting tomorrow morning through early Thursday morning. Residents should prepare for potential heavy snow accumulations of 10 to 20 inches, northerly winds gusting up to 50 to 65 miles per hour, and visibility reduced to 1/2 mile or less at times. The worst conditions are expected between tomorrow late afternoon through early Wednesday evening, with Unalaska likely to experience the most severe weather and highest snow accumulation during the storm. Monitor the latest weather forecast for updates on this winter storm watch. South Central and Kodiak Island residents are preparing for a likely eruption of Mount Spur, a volcano about 80 miles west of Anchorage. But the potential impacts of that will pale in comparison to the largest volcanic eruption in the 20th century, the 2012 Nova Aurepta Katmai eruption. Ash from that event over a century ago still affects residents on Kodiak Island to this day. KMXT's Davis Hovey has this story.
If Mount Spur erupts, scientists say the amount of ashfall that hits South Central and Kodiak Island communities will depend on several factors. Still, any amount of ash will likely ground flights, darken the sky, and potentially pose health risks to those with respiratory issues. Even if the worst-case scenario occurs, Kodiak residents won't experience anything close to what happened in 1912. More than 100 years ago, a village called Sovanoski sat in what is now Katmai National Park and Preserve, at the foot of Mount Katmai. The village was used traditionally as a subsistence fishing site for salmon. But in 1912, the Novaruptu Katmai eruption forced residents out of their village and across Naknek Lake. Teddy Melganek's parents were among them.
Sparks, you could see them, sparks in the air. A lot of ash in the ground. The ground gets so hot, you say you can't even lay down on the ground and you can't go to sleep, it gets warm.
Melganek recounted his experience for University of Alaska Fairbanks oral history program in 1998. He said many elders at the time thought it was the end of the world. In historical accounts the National Park Service collected, witnesses said the ash fallout darkened the sky around Katmai for 3 days. Roughly 100 miles away in Kodiak, ash completely filled the air and plunged the city into darkness, forcing residents to take shelter on the U.S. Revenue cutter Manning. Much of that ash remains in the Valley of 10,000 Smokes to this day, and occasionally gets resuspended in the air by strong northwesterly winds. Hans Schweiger, a research geophysicist with the Alaska Volcano Observatory, says the resuspension is due to an enormous amount of volcanic ash in the area where there is not much vegetation to hold it down in the soil. That's unlike the area around Mount Spur.
That's partly the reason why there's just this almost unlimited source region, but you know, as things age, there's a lot of the fine material can get sort of blown away. These sort of resuspension events can happen with any sort of primary deposit as well. So like when Spur erupted in 1992, there was remobilization and resuspension of ash in the Anchorage area for a couple weeks afterwards.
But in this case, ash from the 1912 Novarupta Katmai eruption continues to hit the west side of Kodiak Island, roughly 65 miles away. That ash has drifted to Larsen Bay and Karluk at least 4 times in the last month. Although the air quality has not been significantly impacted recently, the resuspended ash affects local aircraft that regularly fly passengers from Kodiak to Larsen Bay, Karluk, and other communities around the archipelago. Eric Howard directs operations at Island Air. He says their 2 flights to Larsen Bay were canceled on Monday, April 7th, due to resuspended ash.
The big thing for us is when you do get those strong westerly winds, typically the ash will be worse on the west side of the island. So when we're operating to some of the float stops over there, and then the villages of Larsen Bay and Karluk are usually the ones that get affected by it the most, though I have seen it where it can come all the way up here towards town and affect all flights.
He says it seems like ash is blowing to the island more often this spring due to the lack of a winter snowpack. Schweiger, the geophysicist, agrees. He says there does not seem to be an end in sight for this volcanic phenomenon.
I think there's probably enough there so that it's going to continue to blow around for the rest of my lifetime.
But Schweiger adds that it will depend on how much revegetation can occur in that area containing all the ash in the coming years. Alaska Volcano Observatory and the National Weather Service will continue to monitor resuspended ash from the 1912 Novoruptik Katmai eruption and issue advisories in the interest of public health, such as air quality advisories or warnings for local aviators when warranted. For the latest information about this or Mount Spur, go online to the Alaska Volcano Observatory website. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Havi.
Two Anchorage teens are trying to encourage more young people to get involved with philanthropy, giving their time and money to benefit society as a whole. Youth Philanthropists Alaska, or YPA, aims to teach kids aged 12 to 17 the power of investing in local charities. Alaska Public Media's Ava White spoke with 8th grader Liam Cuddy and 9th grader Adam Kaufman, who started the group. They had their first meeting earlier this month and raised more than $2,000 for Covenant House Alaska. Cuddy says he's excited by the group's early success.
We got, I think, 72 kids at our first meeting, and they each got a bunch of, like, one-sentence descriptions of nonprofits, so they could just see their first impressions of the nonprofits, which nonprofits supported causes that they really care about, if it's homelessness, helping people with disabilities. And then we took two of the top two nonprofits who got the most responses, and also one wildcard nonprofit, and then those three presented at the first meeting. So each kid gives $10, each of the three nonprofits presents, and then they vote on which nonprofit to give the grand prize pool to. So I think for our first meeting it was $2,160, and so we give the grand prize pool to the nonprofit with the most votes. So the nonprofits for our first meeting were Covenant House Alaska, the eventual winner, Special Olympics Alaska, and the August Fund. We had some corporate sponsors say, hey, we'd love to match you guys, and so that jumped it.
Adam, are there any particular issues or causes that you're especially passionate about supporting?
So my brother had colitis, and he spent a lot of his time supporting the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation of America. And I'm just pretty into that cause, because growing up, I would have bake sales and I would sell lemonade on the side of the road trying to raise money for that cause, because it was close to my heart. You know, my brother had that disease.
So do you feel like it was instilled in you from a young age?
I think so, yeah. And I found how important that was to me, and I wanted to help do that for other kids.
Liam, philanthropy is obviously important for so many reasons, but why is it important for young people specifically to get into philanthropy, do you think?
I think the truth is Alaska is just facing a population loss right now. And so I think we really need a set of young kids who are like, man, this community has done so much for me. I probably won't be able to give that back now as a, 15-year-old. But I can at least start, and it really gets them engaged with their community. And I strongly believe that if they feel engaged with their community, maybe they go to college out of state, maybe they get a bit of working experience out of state, but I believe that they'll come back to Alaska because they really feel connected to the community.
Also, another reason is, philanthropy is so important in young people, because this is kind of the most developmental part of our life. And if we grow up giving philanthropy, we'll see the importance of it, and then we'll go and do it for our whole life. But what's really overlooked is that, yeah, it's for philanthropy. Yeah, we're making an impact in these nonprofits, but we're also bringing all the kids together and teaching them about philanthropy. And if they have a fun first interaction with philanthropy, that'll inspire more kids to do it. And they grow older and they do it, then they teach their children to do it. And it just generations of philanthropy are inspired by even what could be seen as a small event here.
Liam, has this experience changed how you view your community or even the state?
I think it's even viewed how I change the nation or how I view the nation as a whole, because anyone who is looking at the tensions in our society can see that we just have a lot of differences right now, and that there are a lot of people who very much disagree with each other. But it made me have more hope for the future, because before I was thinking, man, can these differences ever even be reconciled? And then I was thinking, oh my gosh, they actually can, because we can have this thing of bringing good to the community, and that can bring everyone together, and that can kind of start working through the differences. And so that really changed how I viewed Anchorage, the state, the national, like even just the world. And I think this is something that isn't even recognized as much from adults, but youth care. They really care about their communities, and when given a chance to show it, they really come up and they show up for their community, and they really want to be an engaged and active part of their community.
That was Alaska Public Media's Avid White speaking with Liam Cuddy and Adam Kaufman, the founders of Youth Philanthropists Alaska. The group's next meeting will be in October. Let's take a look at KUCB's community calendar this week. KUCB's Board of Directors will have a regular meeting Wednesday evening starting at 5:30 at Burma Road Chapel on the second floor. The public is welcome to attend. Agenda items include studio dedication planning, FY26 budget, and fundraising plans for the coming fiscal year. The Museum of the Aleutians invites community members of all ages to share input on future programs, spaces, and features. There will be four different sessions: Thursday from 9 to noon in the morning at the museum, Thursday evening from 5 to 7 at the Unalaska Public Library, a luncheon on Friday from 11:30 to 1 at the Senior Center, and Friday from 1:30 to 4 in the afternoon at the museum. For more information, contact director@aleutians.org. The PCR Spring Festival has been rescheduled to this Saturday afternoon from noon to 4 at the Community Center Gym. Students will showcase their art, and there will be live music and vendors. The festival will now coincide with Easter activities, including the Easter egg hunt and pictures with the Easter Bunny. For more information on this week's community events, head to our community calendar at KUCB.org. That's the news from Unalaska. I'm Sophia Stewart Rossi, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at KUCB.org. And please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.
It's time now for your community window here on KSDP. Starting with job openings, the QT Tribe of Sandpoint is looking for a grant writer, an executive director, an environmental assistant, and an administrative assistant. The Shimmigan Corporation of Sandpoint is hiring a bartender. The Palouf Harbor Tribe is hiring a tribal environmental coordinator. EATS is hiring a behavioral health trainee and a community health representative. Both of those positions can be in Sandpoint or King Cove. They are also hiring a clinical information clerk for King Cove, a community health aide for Falls Pass and Nelson Lagoon, and a clinical information clerk slash janitor for Cold Bay. And today is April 11th, 2025. Happy birthday to Kelly Bjornstedt, and happy birthday to Kathy Bear. And that's all for the community window. If you have anything you'd like for us to put on the air or web, you can contact us through email at cw@apradio.org. You can call us at 907-383-5737, or you can still fax us at 907-383-5271. Also, look for updates, meeting archives, and more at apradio.org. I am Amy Mack. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Aleutian Peninsula Broadcasting is generously supported by the City of Sandpoint. Sandpoint is a first-class city in the Aleutians East Borough, located on Humboldt Harbor on the northwestern Popoff Island. Anchorage is 575 nautical miles to the northeast. The Sandpoint City Council meets the second Tuesday of every month at 7 p.m. in the City Hall Council Chambers. Contact the City of Sandpoint by calling 907-383-2696, emailing sptcity@arctic.net, or visiting their website at sandpointak.com.
Clear my head from what went down last night. You are tuned into 830 AM KSDP Radio, 88.1 FM K201DA in Key Cove, Alaska, 88.1 KFPS Falls Pass, Alaska. Meh.
Second chance, when love makes a sound, babe. stinks. Love stinks.
Dang.